Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for joining us here today, and thanks to those online also for joining us via webinar. My name is Julie McCarty, and I am a Knowledge Management Specialist at the USAID Bureau for Food Security. And I'd like to welcome you to the March Ag Sector Council Seminar entitled Food Security in a World of Natural Resource Scarcity, the Role of Agricultural Technologies. And we're very excited to have Mark Rosegrant with the International Food Policy Research Institute here to discuss a recently released report that uses a new data model to measure the impact of 11 agricultural innovations. And we're also excited to have Julie Howard with the USAID Bureau for Food Security giving an introduction, and I'll pass it over to them in a moment. But beforehand, just a couple of our usual housekeeping issues. We always like to ask folks to silence your cell phones, just so that they don't interrupt the speakers. So if you wouldn't mind doing that if your cell phone is not currently silenced. However, you're welcome to keep your cell phones handy if you are a Twitter user and would like to tweet along with this event today. We use the hashtag AgEvents here on the screen if you'd like to tweet along. And if you're joining us online, we definitely encourage you to use Twitter, but we also encourage you to share your experiences and your resources in the chat box. There's a lot of great discussion that happens in our online chat boxes. And just a shout out and thank you to the Knowledge-Driven Agricultural Development Team who are facilitating the webinar today. Also, we ask generally that you hold your questions until the end so that we can pass around this microphone for recording purposes, and also so that the online participants can hear your questions. This session is being recorded, and so we'll be sure to send out the recording, transcripts, all of our resources to everyone who joined us today. And lastly, there are some surveys on all of your chairs. Even if you've filled out the surveys before, we always request that you fill them out again just to help us get a better gauge on our participation and just help us adjust these events for the future to serve you better. So you can fill that out during the presentation or at the end. And if you're joining online, you'll see some polls during the Q&A portion in that regard. And very lastly, just one upcoming event to let you all know about. Here in this room, actually, tomorrow, there is an MPEP seminar entitled Smallholders in Value Chains, Evidence on Scale, Productivity, and Benefits. That's another seminar run under the KDAD, or Knowledge-Driven Agricultural Development contract. And if you want to register for the webinar, you can do that on microlinks.org. All right, I think we can go ahead and get down to business. One quick shout out also to Deb Karstoyu and Alex Rinkus from CropLife, Nila Chetan from IFPRI, and John McMurdy from the Bureau for Food Security for helping us get this event conceived of and rolling today. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Julie Howard, our chief scientist with the USAID Bureau for Food Security.
And welcome everybody who's here with us in the room, and welcome to all the online participants. So we're really excited today to have Mark Rosegrant of IFPRI here with us, and more on Mark in a moment. He's going to present the results of their new report. It's a new report, the Food Security in a World of Natural Resource Scarcity, work that was funded by CropLife. And this is a study that measures the impacts of agricultural innovation on farm yields, prices, hunger, and trade under various climate scenarios in 2050. And identifies practices that could significantly. So I just want to talk for a minute that even though this study was by CropLife, it's already really CID. So we'll just go through this. Many of you may be familiar with.
I'm sorry, can you just hold the mic close to your mouth? Thank you.
Okay, how's that? All right, thank you. Many of you may be familiar with the Feed the Future research strategy, which we put together. USDA and USAID held wide consultations with the U.S. university community, the CGIAR, our developing country, agricultural research partners, and others. So that was released in 2010. And it was a little bit, I think, over the horizon in its thinking at that time, because the overarching goal of our research strategy is exactly sustainable intensification as an important way that we need to think ahead to addressing the consequences of coming climate change, actually climate change that we're already seeing. So I think, you know, we've been very busy with John and Rob Bertram and Sarah Moon Chapiton in sort of reframing our research programs around that guiding research strategy. And over half of our resources are devoted to things that address climate resilience, climate-resistant varieties of wheat, insect-resistant, disease-resistant varieties of cereals, as well as legumes and horticultural crops. And more than just climate-resilient varieties, we've also put quite a lot of attention to what are the management practices that are going to be important for smallholder farmers. Water management, integrated pest management, better use of the fertilizer, integrating legumes, triple cropping legumes to improve soil fertility, all of these things. And I think what we're seeing in this report is the beginning of a validation, a strong validation of this approach as very, very important to our most important beneficiaries, the smallholder farmers in the field. These are going to be especially important technologies to help them deal right now and into the future with the impacts of climate change. So that's one way that this is already proven useful to us. In fact, I've already passed a copy of your report to the administrator, Mark. You don't know that. Second, I think this is the law of unintended consequences, but really the funding from CropLife and IFPRI undertaking this study came at exactly the right time for USAID. We and Feed the Future and the Bureau for Food Security have really put a great focus over the past 12 to 18 months on scaling agricultural technologies. About 14 months ago, the administrator in an address at IFPRI headquarters laid out a challenge, said, the most innovative technologies in the world don't really count until they get out to farmers' fields. So how can we work together, U.S. universities, CG community, developing country partners, to make sure that new technologies are adopted by farmers at scale? So in following up to that challenge, we've really been working hard, and IFPRI's been a tremendous partner to us in this area, trying to figure out with countries what technologies are going to be most important for you to focus on. And where are those technologies likely to have the biggest payoff? And it happens that the modeling, this very innovative model that Mark's going to talk to us about today, is exactly helping us. It's already helping us work with countries and work with some of our partners like the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa and sit down with countries and say, here's what we think could happen with this package of technologies. Here's where we think it's most important to concentrate on genetics and water. So it's really helping even right now as we start to think about where do we prioritize our scaling resources and energy. So thank you, IFPRI, and thank you, CropLife, for that important unintended consequence that's having, I think, already a measurable payoff for us. Okay, so now to introduce Mark Rosegrant, and I actually feel like for most of this audience, probably, Mark, you don't need much of an introduction. Mark directs the Environmental and Production Technologies Division of the International Food Policy Research Institute, one of the CGIAR centers here in Washington. Mark holds a PhD in public policy from University of Michigan, and I'm a Michigan State person myself. And I'm gonna rush quickly through the rest of this now, but anyway, I hope that we don't end up the Final Four this year. Oh my gosh, oh dear. Okay, so Mark directs a research portfolio on climate change, water resources, looking at impacts of crop genetics. So all of these things that really are critical in addressing the impacts of climate change. He's the author of 7 books and over 100 refereed papers in agricultural economics, water resources, and food policy. So Mark and his work are really at the cutting edge of this multidisciplinary approach, agriculture, production, natural resources that we're all looking to at the moment. So we at USAID and Feed the Future appreciate Mark and his team's work. He's also appreciated by his colleagues. He's a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS, and also a fellow of the Agriculture and Applied Economics Association. So Mark, thank you and your team for this work and really look forward to hearing your presentation today.
Very happy. In fact, wasn't completely an accident. This has worked out. We as we were developing this, we certainly had our eye also on our other work that we were doing with USAID and the generous support that AID has provided for this kind of work. So and I'm glad it has been working out, I think, quite well. So let me just start out by also drawing attention. This was a big team effort. You can see the authors of the report, as Julie mentioned, is very much multidisciplinary. So we have crop modelers, agronomists, plant pathologists, as well as economists in this project. And I think that's why one of the strengths of the project. So let me start just with a quick overview of the project. I guess I don't have to tell this audience so much, but we do a lot of work on looking at the future in a formal modeling sense, and our analysis shows that these multiple threats that we're facing, including climate change, water scarcity, biofuel demand, continues to divert land away from food production, as well as significant growth now in income, including now in Africa, where there's a very rapid growth in much more rapid growth in income, income growth that leads to a high propensity to consume more food, because in Africa they're moving from a fairly low levels of consumption. So Africa is becoming a big driver also for food demand. And population growth is still high. And again, Africa is the key here. As much as 80% of the growth in the world population between now and 2050 is projected by the UN to be in Africa. So that's another, that's a scary result that shows where some of the need is. So we think that is going to lead to continued high food prices, including increased prices up from now to 2050. Both for cereals and meats and other key crops. In addition, the land and environment is under threat because of the need to grow more food. There's lots of pressure on land, on environmental preservation, potential for significant reductions in forest area unless we can get more sustainable growth and productivity as well. There's a lot of work that's already shown over years that improved investment in agriculture research leading to technological change is a huge game changer in terms of total investments in productivity growth. But what we've seen is that there's been insufficient work on trying to tease out where should that research dollar be allocated. So what we've tried to do with this report is to look at much more disaggregated impacts of specific technologies by country and even below country level. A lot of the analysis here is done at actual pixel level, which I'll describe in a moment. So it can also be disaggregated not only by country, but by agroclimatics. And the work specifically it's both a global approach, so we do cover the whole world, but we also, of course, cover regions, countries, and even subnational results. We look here at 11 technologies. And these include, as Julie had mentioned, both kind of farming systems or management techniques, such as no-till, integrated soil fertility management, organic agriculture, precision agriculture, and then combinations of inputs and management, such as crop protection. We looked at two higher-tech irrigation strategies, drip and sprinkler irrigation, as well as water harvesting. And then we also looked at genetic improvement for drought tolerance, heat tolerance, and nitrogen use efficiency as additional technologies that we evaluated. The assessment includes the three main staples, so wheat, rice, and maize. So just quickly to give an idea, I'll go through these. No-till, of course, is using techniques with little or no soil disturbance in combination with retention of crop residues, crop rotation, use of cover crops. ISFM includes combination, trying to use not complete removal of chemical fertilizers, but combination of those with crop residues, manure and composting techniques, again, to try to improve soil quality over time as well as yield. Precision of agriculture includes GPS-assisted delivery of ag inputs, but also we're looking here not only at the big high-tech tractors in Brazil and the United States, but lower level technologies of smaller scale practices that still do manage to take into account the field parameters from input to delivery to plant spacing and water applications. Organic agriculture is, of course, is self-explanatory without use of manufactured fertilizer, pesticides, et cetera. We look at water harvesting, which is, again, water channeled to crop fields through small-scale or large-scale catchments. Drip irrigation, where you apply it, there's a small discharge directly around each plant or the root zone. Again, here, this can be not only high technology, but things such as plastic tubing that's used frequently, for example, in South Asia to distribute water. Sprinkler irrigation, again, is both pressure, water distributed through pressure from a pipe network, and again, both here we're using, talking about both the center pivot kinds of irrigation here in the U.S., but also smaller scale micro sprinklers in developing countries. Heat tolerance or improved varieties showing characteristics that allow plants to maintain yields at higher temperatures. Of course, drought tolerance incorporates characteristics that allow plants to have better yields compared to regular varieties. And then nitrogen efficiency, where you get more bang for the fertilizer buck. So you have higher yields at any given fertilizer use, or you can reduce fertilizer use while maintaining yields. And crop protection, we have three types on pests, plant diseases, weeds, and other pests. The modeling is done using primarily two link models. One is the DSAT system, which is an open source crop modeling system, biophysical model, which assesses the impact of technologies or technology mixes on productivity and resource use. And I'll show you in a moment a little more how that's utilized. And then that's linked to the IFPRI's impact model, which is a global economic agricultural model, which assesses changes in productivities due to technology adoption, as well as to a wide range of other investments and policies, and then can estimate food production, consumption, trade, food prices, calorie availability, and various measures of food security. And it solves on an annual basis out to 2050. It is a very high resolution, such for a global model. It's a 60 by 60 kilometer grid, which is also 0.5 degree or 30 arc minute grids, which, so there's like nine, the world is divided up into 95,000 grids, of which about 21,000 have rice, wheat, maize, and or a combination of those. So we're essentially solving for the impacts of these technologies in each of these 21,000 cells where the crops exist. We start out, we compare the technology scenarios with a business as usual scenario, which broadly speaking continues rates of investment from what they have been in the last decades, but also updated with what we know of for plans for future investment in agriculture research and irrigation policies such as biofuel mandates. You can see there some of the characteristics of the business as usual scenario. So we start with essentially the levels of fertilizer existing now, but with some trend growth, particularly furrow irrigation, and existing planting density and planting windows, conventional tillage, et cetera. The technology scenarios, then we go into the DSAT model and tweak the various parameters that are affected within this crop model to represent the changes that are brought about by the technology scenario. Then we also look at rates of adoption over time of technologies based on yield and profitability of those technologies. We look at two different scenarios, climate change scenarios, to make sure the results aren't driven by just the climate change scenario. The one I'll show here is the Maroc A1D scenario. That's about it was considered a fairly high rate of climate change during the IPCC fourth assessment. It gets about a 2 to a little bit more than 2 degrees centigrade change in temperatures between 2000 and 2050. That's probably now a relatively low level, actually, or low to moderate level, based on current thinking. Just an example, don't have time to show, of course, all these different technology specifications, but just to look here at the drought tolerance, to give a sample of how we do these interventions within the DSAT model. So drought tolerance is we model with a combination of characteristics. First, the increased root volume, which show we increase the root growth parameters within the each of the crop representations. And we have enhanced root water extraction capability, which is implemented by decreasing lower limits of available soil moisture parameters, or so allowing them to access additional root water. And then for maize, another important parameter that's what we work on is a reduction in the what's called the ASI, or the anthesis to silking interval, or flowering to silking interval, which is the period in which maize is particularly susceptible to drought. So we implement that by having changing the shoot growth rate so as to implement a lower level of sensitivity to drought. The results that are then taken from the DSAT model are, again, we implement the technology strategies and these highly differentiated yield effects. We plug in the changes in yields over time from that DSAT model into the impact model. So you shift the rate of exogenous growth in crop yields to represent the technology change, and then can estimate over time the difference in the economic outcomes due to that technology intervention in the impact model, generating food supply and demand, trade, food prices, and food security and malnutrition as well. So let's move on to some of the key results. And again, we have to show these mainly at a fairly aggregate level, given the time. But the book shows a much more detail geographically as well. Let's look at first then at the global results. So these are from the crop modeling. So these are the potential increases in yield based on the physical changes in the crop model that are introduced by these technologies. And showing here for maize, rice, and wheat. We start out. Important one to point out is drought tolerance, which actually looks fairly modest here. You get a 5% higher average yield of maize in 2050, 6% for maize, 2% for rice. Important to point out, first of all, that's actually a positive effect that it's a positive value at all. A lot of previous analysis has thought that you would actually get an average lower yields from drought tolerant varieties than you do from standard varieties, because you're giving up a little bit of yield potential for the drought tolerance. But our results don't support that. And moreover, it's worth noting that these do represent average climates that we're dealing with. So we've run the drought tolerance also with simulating drought scenarios. And there you get as much as 20 to 30% in higher yields using the drought tolerant variety than you do with the standard susceptible variety. So you get higher average yields, but then good and significant protection for drought events. Heat tolerance comes out as very important, especially of course for maize and wheat, and that's of course partly because of climate change. These counterbalance a lot of the negative impacts of climate change if you can implement them effectively. Integrated soil fertility management is also one of the very substantial improvements. Nitrogen use efficiency, especially for rice, is high, but also very substantial for maize and wheat. No-till, I guess if there was a surprise to me, the high level of impact of no-till would probably be the biggest surprise. As we look at it, this is really because in our implementation of this, we do assume that you're maintaining this practice throughout the time period. So it's essential, in fact, that you do that it's a long-term practice. It can't just be, well, you do it for 3 years and then farm policy changes, so you plow under it. So you lose a lot of that yield impact is lost if you end up using no-till just intermittently. So it really is important that it's maintained. Precision agriculture came off as very positive, and we find it has significant potential in South Asia and parts of Africa as well. And you're in fact seeing precision agriculture already moving in the Punjab. I think that's a story that, you know, 5 years ago people would tell me, oh, why would you even think about precision agriculture? It's never going to happen in developing countries. Well, it's already happening, and I think has this potential. The next three, the irrigation scenarios don't end up having major impacts on yields, but that's because in the assessment we do, the main outcome turns out to be a saving of water in the given unit where you're analyzing, rather than a yield increase. And I'll touch on that in a later slide. Organic agriculture actually comes up as negative. Didn't show on the scale here. There is a yield penalty from the analysis we've done and confirmed by the literature review, substantial literature review, that you are going to pay a price if there's a yields for these three crops from organic agriculture. Crop protection, again, comes off as a very strong positive result. Diseases, insects, and weeds all have substantial gains across the three crops, and if they're implemented on an integrated basis, would have then very substantial increases across these crop protection options. Yep.
Sure. I'm interrupting, but these are averaged across the entire area, 20,000.
Yeah.
Itself.
Yeah, yeah, these are, yeah. So, and we do have maps. I think they're in the annex to the report. We have maps that show at the pixel level, you know, where things are happening. We also have, for example, here, we've broken that down at least by a number of regions. Again, here, we're just looking at three of the technologies, nitrogen use efficiency, ISFM, and no-till, to get an idea of where some of the big impacts are. As you can see that Central America has a very substantial impact. It's an area where there's a lot of relatively poor practices and low yields. But overall, you're also seeing in Africa, the African regions, North Africa, Southern Africa in particular, very large potential increases from these new technologies. Probably not surprising given the relatively low level, but I think it was a very important confirmation to us as well. Other regions that was substantial impacts for nitrogen use efficiency and no-till, for example, is South Asia, West Asia, which is also has a very substantial increase as well. North America, even there, we see as you can see that there is potential for substantial yield gains from these technologies. Looking also then, let's look at drought tolerance, heat tolerance, and crop protection disease component here. See, again, this confirms that drought tolerance is relatively low. The averages are somewhat higher in hotter regions such as East Africa and West Africa. Heat tolerance is strong almost everywhere except in parts of Europe. And again, you see very substantial impacts in North America. And that's partly because in this climate change scenario, we see maize gets hit very hard in the Corn Belt in particular with very negative impacts on maize yield. So the heat tolerance then helps counterbalance that negative impact on crop yield. South Asia, again, has a very large increases in yields due to heat tolerance, again, which makes sense, again, given the impacts of climate change in South Asia. Many others, as you can see, have substantial impacts. Crop protection, again, is very solid across the board. Again, the Africa and Asian regions do particularly well in terms of percentage increases. So let's get back to the issue I mentioned in terms of first on impacts on nitrogen use. We looked also not only just at the yield impacts, but in where feasible, we looked at the impact of these technologies on nitrogen use efficiency in a moment. I'll show you the water results. And here we're looking at this example is the nitrogen use efficiency and the no-till option. And here you see that these not only have significant yield impacts, but also are very positive impacts in terms of saving of nitrogen. So again, the no-till comes off as very strong. It's an example of how to interpret this for the irrigation scenario for wheat. So implementation of no-till would save about 29% of water and 29% more nitrogen productivity. Thank you. Okay. So, and you can see also substantial improvements in nitrogen use efficiency, which you'd expect, obviously, but they're perhaps even more effective than we thought they would be when you implement the genetic gains in nitrogen use. Also, look at the efficient use of a water resources, and here you can see where the big impact of drip and sprinkler irrigation come in here rather than in yields, for crop yields per se. We show here for each of them for maize and wheat the results for sprinkler and drip irrigation with on their lower and then somewhat higher levels of water of rainfall. As you can see, the results tend to be somewhat higher under low rainfall, which you would expect, but it shows that they do provide protection against rain shortfalls. But again, both drip especially, but also sprinkler irrigation save very substantial amounts of water. Of course, this is water that then could be used either elsewhere in the agriculture and irrigation or for the rapidly growing use of water in domestic and industrial uses. Let's look here. This one summarizes then taking into account yield, but also taking into account changes in area use that are introduced by these technologies. For example, when you do that yield shock, you increase yield, you reduce prices somewhat, and that results in somewhat less use of area, and then there's an equilibrium process over time. But you end up then with the total production, as you can see, worldwide of very substantial amounts. And this also takes into account the economic modeling and the rate of growth and adoption of each of these technologies. Again, the same ones tend to be near the top: nitrogen use efficiency, no-till, precision agriculture, heat tolerance, but also then very substantial gains from the combination of crop protection technologies. In terms of impact, and here looking first at maize, then this compares the world price in 2050 under a technology adoption for each of the technologies compared to that baseline or business as usual that I talked about. It shows you know some of them have fairly small effects on prices where the yield impact is not as large, that you do get then significant results from the individual technologies again. With the highest yield impacts having the highest impact effect over time on world prices as well. Similar effects for rice. Here in the nitrogen use efficiency, it was particularly powerful impact on rice, but also you can see integrated soil fertility management, precision agriculture, heat tolerance, and crop protection coming in strong. So that helped reduce those high prices that I mentioned. Wheat. Again, the story is similar, somewhat different ordering, but you can see the relative impact. I think what's most important is not what happens when you implement one technology, but what happens if you are able to get broad-based adoption of all of these technologies. And I think one of the key results come out is in what no single technology is going to solve things. Some of them have bigger impacts than others, but what we really need is an effort that would get significant adoption of all the technologies. And this shows that you get very large impacts on world prices by adoption of these technologies. Over 40% lower prices in 2050 compared to the projected 2050 prices for maize, about 40% for rice, and a little over 40% for wheat. So very large, positive impacts for poor consumers for sure. And farmers are the adopting farmers also come out fine in terms of our analysis because the growth in productivity they have outpaces the change in prices, so they still end up with net higher profits under the technology growth. The other very important factor to note is that adoption of these technologies would greatly reduce the pressure on the land base, because when you're getting the higher yields on existing areas through more sustainable intensification, you don't need to move out. Farmers don't have to move out and plant in fallow areas or chop down forests to grow things. So you get significant, again, price reductions in land area under each of the three crops due to these adoption of these technologies. Finally, also going on to what happens in terms of the population at risk of hunger in developing countries. And again, this is 2050 with technology versus 2050 baseline. And here again, you see about the same ranking, of course, in terms of the impact on population at risk of hunger. But again, you can see that some individual ones are quite high, others more modest. Overall, though, you get about a 35% reduction in projected hunger in 2050 compared to the baseline. So it's not just a matter of prices or physical crop yields. You're getting very substantial improvements in food security from this technological portfolio. Let's just sum up what some of the key messages are. First of all, as we saw, the adoption of this set of technologies significantly reduces projected food prices compared to that climate change baseline. As I mentioned, farmer adopters do increase real income because the technological change is more rapid than the price decline that's projected. We have about 40% reduction in the number of people at risk of hunger 2050 compared to the baseline. Again, this is considering these combined technologies under the feasible adoption pathways. Some of the individual crops improved management technologies, including no-till, precision agriculture, ISFM. As we saw, are some of the leading technologies with large impacts across many regions, with particularly a high level of impact in Africa and South Asia. Nitrogen use efficiency came out as a very strong positive technology, not only with yield impacts, but through reduction of the negative environmental impacts from fertilizer use, such as reduces the greenhouse gas emissions substantially, as well as runoff from fertilizer use. Heat-tolerant varieties, again, they proved to be very effective in terms under these climate change scenarios. Drought-tolerant, as I mentioned, performs well, as well as susceptible varieties under no drought stress, but with significant yield benefits under drought conditions. Crop protection has strong positive yield impacts. And technology impacts are higher with irrigation. One thing we didn't show in the slides is that when you compare the impact of other technologies in rain-fed conditions versus irrigated conditions, these impacts are invariably higher under irrigated conditions where you have more control. So beyond the high-tech irrigation I mentioned, their irrigation itself has a positive impact in terms of inducing higher impacts than the other technologies. We saw the large regional differences in agriculture technology impacts. Some of the targeting, for example, heat tolerance to North America and South Asia, drought tolerance to Latin America, Middle East and North Africa, and Sub-Saharan Africa. Crop protection came up particularly high in Sub-Saharan Africa, South Asia, and Eastern Europe. We did find it's not organic agriculture. Does not come out as a preferred strategy for these three crops. There's a lot of evidence that there are niche markets for high-valued wheat and rice, particularly around, for example, the major cities in developing countries. But it's not a strategy to pursue for broad-based food security goals. So overall, given natural resource scarcity, the technologies that reduce resource use come off as particularly important, that they have both high yield impacts and resource use reductions. It includes no-till, integrated soil fertility management, nitrogen use efficiency, precision agriculture, and for the resource uses, drip and sprinkler irrigation as well. So that, again, just summing up, obviously we found very positive food security impacts for all the ag technologies, but the key then in what USAID, as well as we at IFPRI, are trying to work on is how do we get these scaled up and adopted. And I think that's the key next step, is to try to translate these findings and the more detailed findings that are also available in the report, to try to look at targeting where and how to upscale these different crops. So, and thanks also. And CropLife International was the primary funder. We also got funding from the U.S. State Department and also from the CGIAR research program on policies, institutions, markets, and had great inputs from the advisory panel as well. So thank you very much.